Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth, sitting in for Ann today. Across Ohio, college administrators watched with concern, alarm even, as coronavirus cases crept upward this summer and soared to record highs in July. That set off a flurry of changes and updates all around the state, with some universities scuttling their plans for on-campus classes to start. Schools across the state are taking a variety of approaches, from entirely remote classes to hybrid instruction models to encouraging students to take a gap year. Jen Smola covers higher education for the Columbus Dispatch, and she's been following these changes very closely. Welcome to the program, Jennifer.
Thanks, Claire, for having me.
So I want to drill down into some school-specific plans in a moment, but just to start, give us an overview of how universities and colleges have approached this. What are they weighing as they make these decisions?
Sure. Well, it's been an interesting summer. As you might remember, Ohio colleges were kind of part of that first wave back in March to kind of shut everything down. And as they closed out the school year virtually, they had to start thinking about what was going to happen this fall. And so they've had to consider, most importantly, just safety and the health of students. When we think back to some of the first things we saw in Ohio with the coronavirus, it was local officials kind of limiting and shutting down the Arnold, in part because of all of the people who were coming to our city from other places. And when you think about the college campuses here in Central Ohio, like Ohio State and others, that's exactly what happens in the fall. So they're thinking about how to reduce density on college campuses, how to keep students safe within their dorm rooms, where they're just always going to be somewhat close to one another, how to spread out classes and desks, how to manage online versus in-person teaching and classes, and also just students socially, you know, that's what college is about, is students interacting with one another, studying with one another, meeting new friends, and they have to take all of those things into consideration in addition to all the things we hear about with coronavirus all the time, regular cleaning, hygiene, all of those things, contact tracing, all of those things.
Yeah, no kidding. And especially when it's college students, so you have to kind of factor in, well, how well are they going to follow these rules when the rules are in place?
Sure.
So I'm wondering how final these decisions are. I mean, just at the end of last week, we saw a few schools change their tack. CCAD, for instance, changed its mind and decided to start with online only. Do we think this is going to be the final kind of policy, given that school's about to start in, what, less than a month?
I think this is where colleges are having a hard time. They wanted to get some sort of decisions out to students and families earlier this summer so that there could be some planning, but they've had to maintain flexibility and try to let students and families know that things can change. And so we did start to see some of those changes last week, like you mentioned, with the with CCAD. Ohio University also made some changes. They decided not to necessarily commit to being online all semester, but they're going to start online and see if they can't bring students back later in the semester toward the end of September. Same situation with Miami University. So in checking with other Central Ohio colleges, they are all still, at least at this point, moving forward with their original fall plans, most of which are some sort of hybrid model of a combination of in-person classes and online classes. And most of them are trying to stick with that, but keep emphasizing that they're ready to change if necessary and that they're kind of watching the health guidance closely. And I think that's a concern of families and students, is that they might want to go back, but they're worried that if they do, they're just going to be sent home again later.
Mm. Well, and looking at Miami University, for instance, they're kind of interesting because they're offering kind of a forked approach. They're saying you can either go fully remote or you can start online, but then move in mid-September, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. They're offering that. I believe Ohio University is offering that as well. And most other colleges in Ohio, I think, are offering some version of that, where they know that students might have underlying conditions or might have health concerns or might be with a family member who might have some of those health conditions that they're thinking about and worrying about. So most colleges are offering students some option to work exclusively online during this time if that's what they want.
But that's must be more work, right? To not only plan for one contingency, but to plan for two, to offer both in-person and hybrid classes. Have they talked at all about what sort of manpower is going to be needed to pull this off?
You know, I think this is where professors and faculty, this really falls to them. Some of them are still kind of waiting to hear how they're going to be delivering their courses. And that's been a concern throughout, you know, since the initial kind of pivot to online education in March. They've had to kind of reconfigure how they teach. And that's something that the faculty and professors have just had to be really flexible on. And I know that talking with them, a lot of them have, you know, figured out a lot of new great ways to make sure they're still serving the students the best they can. But it has been a lot more work for them because in some ways they're teaching in multiple different ways now, or doing a lecture, you know, preparing a lecture in person, but also online. So it's a lot for them to kind of sort through, and the uncertainty is, you know, hanging above them at every step as well.
Absolutely. I actually wanted to talk more about faculty. You wrote a report on the American Association of University Professors' response. What have they been saying here in Ohio to some of these plans? What's the faculty response been?
Faculty have really just wanted a say in the decision making, and I think at Ohio State, at least, and in some other cases at other Ohio colleges, faculty have been able to kind of request the mode in which they'd like to teach, whether that's the hybrid or if they'd like to be completely online. But colleges have made certain promises to students that, you know, there will be some classes, in most cases, in person. And so they're going to need the faculty and professors, in at least some cases, to be available for that. So that's been what's kind of difficult, is that faculty, same as students or families, might have health concerns or are taking care of children now who aren't going back to school. And so they're trying to sort through that the same as anyone else is. And again, it's been uncertainty, and I think it will continue to be somewhat uncertain leading up right until the first day of classes.
Yeah. And when are those classes starting? Because this has adjusted calendars. It hasn't just been adjusting the method, but some schools have actually changed around the way that they're when they're starting and when they're finishing, right?
Correct. So most at least Central Ohio schools are starting around the same time that they would typically start. So late August, a lot of August 24th or 25th start dates for classes, whether it's virtual or online. I think Ohio Dominican might start a little bit earlier, around August 17th. But nearly all of the colleges in Ohio that I've kind of been tracking are eliminating or strongly encouraging students to pass on fall breaks, Labor Day breaks, any three-day weekends that may have formerly existed in a fall semester calendar. They want to do away with those, and they're also pretty much sending students home at Thanksgiving, and they'll either finish out a week or two of classes remotely, or finals have been pushed up to be taken remotely after Thanksgiving. Colleges are just trying to reduce students pretty much scattering, going back home to all over the country, and then coming back to campus and bringing whatever virus or germs back with them. So that's really kind of what everyone is doing, is try to stay on campus once you get here. And once you go home at Thanksgiving, you're staying there.
Stay home. How does this picture differ for small schools versus big schools?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I talked to some of the leaders of Ohio's small private schools earlier this year when the pandemic was first kind of unfolding in the spring, and they were all very worried about coming back in the fall because they don't get that same level of state support and funding. They really make a lot of their money with students being on campus. That's how they support what they do, is students being on campus, living on campus, using their services, living in their dorms. So they kind of said that some campuses are going to be in danger if we don't have students back on campus. So you know, we haven't seen too many yet in Central Ohio pull back completely and say we're going to go completely online. And I think that's part of it.
It's a financial question.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of, Ohio University has laid off hundreds of employees. Do we know what sort of financial hit these schools are expecting to take?
Well, in the spring, Ohio public schools That was just in the fiscal year ending in June. They estimated, Ohio's 14 public universities combined, estimated that the virus had cost them somewhere between $290 to $310 million collectively. And they've, all Ohio higher ed institutions have received quite a chunk in federal relief money and CARES Act money. But that was, you know, that was just a couple of weeks at the end of the semester that got upended. And now we're questioning whether or not this is going to continue through the fall. So I think we can continue to expect some budget challenges. Ohio University was kind of experiencing some budget challenges that the virus, you know, only exacerbated. So we'll have to see. I know Ohio State was planning, kind of game planning for various scenarios with budget cuts, asking departments to consider what their budget might look like with a 5% reduction, a 10% reduction, a 15% reduction, just trying to figure out what this school year might look like. So we're going to be paying close attention to potential cuts. I know the University of Akron has had some cuts already that have been pretty controversial. So you hate to see that at colleges because you hope that they can maintain faculty to teach students and continue with their academic mission. But it's also, you know, has to operate a bit like a business, and there are bottom lines and budgets. So we'll have to see what happens into the fall and depending on enrollment.
Yeah. Some other states have introduced rules for colleges and universities, you know, regulations. Has the Ohio government, the state house, or the governor moved at all on pandemic era regulation of higher education?
Governor DeWine and his administration released some guidance for Ohio higher education institutions. This was back in July. Those were pretty, you know, not too strict. They were more so guidelines, very few mandates, if you will, or strict rules. You know, face masks, social distancing where it can be accomplished, testing, things like that, the same old, most of which colleges were already working to implement anyway. I don't think there were any huge bombs in those guidelines that the colleges were surprised by. So at this point, it's kind of up to colleges, although when Governor DeWine announced these guidelines, I think he kind of hit the nail on the head when he said that, you know, these colleges know that they have to convince parents and students and families that this is going to be a safe place for them. So unlike maybe K-12 school where a student has to go to school, colleges are a place where students and families pay money, you know, and they want to make sure that it's going to be safe and that they're going to get the education that they plan to get. So colleges kind of have their work cut out for them in that respect.
That's interesting. I also wanted to ask about athletics. I imagine that athletics are a huge question mark, especially because when you talk about, oh, they don't want people going scattering across the country and coming back. Well, in order to do athletics, someone has to travel. And of course, you have to interact with students from another school.
Correct. Yeah. So athletics have been a huge question mark. We are seeing a lot of changes with schools saying, you know, we're just going to play our conference. We're going to limit the games we play. Some of the smaller private schools have kind of backed away from athletics altogether for the fall. And DeWine told some of our Dispatch sports reporters last week that one of his main concerns is the things that go on around sports. So the tailgating, the bars and congregating to watch. So that's obviously a big concern. And in some cases, you know, it's a way that some schools bring in money, although for many smaller private schools in Ohio, that's not so much a money maker. But it's certainly something to consider. And they often attract a lot of Ohio students to play sports. So if that's not something that they can offer them, that's another part of that equation as to who's coming to campus and who wants to attend this fall.
Before we let you go, I have to ask about schools that cater to commuters. We've been talking a lot about four-year universities, but the pandemic must be hitting community college like Columbus State as well.
Sure. So Columbus State, they've kind of made the commitment earlier on in the summer, even back into the late spring, that they were going to continue this fall pretty much exclusively online. They kind of made that decision wanting to give their students that certainty moving into it. And community colleges have the ability to be a little bit more flexible because they don't have things like residence halls and things like that to consider. So it'll be interesting to see how enrollment at some of these places like community colleges and Columbus State either goes up or stays the same or goes down this fall.
You definitely hear parents saying, oh, well, I'll just send my kid to get their gen ed courses if they're only going to be learning remotely at CSCC, and then they'll figure out 4-year college later.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something that students and families are really thinking about. And the way Central Ohio colleges are right now, they all have a lot of transfer agreements in place with places like Columbus State. So it's really easy to take courses at a local community college and then pick up with those, you know, transfer those credits and pick up with that at a 4-year college later on. I think in some cases with entering first year students at college, it's an unfortunate scenario because many of these students just had their senior spring of high school kind of ripped away from them. And I'm sure a lot of families were hoping that the start of college for them could be a little bit more normal. And unfortunately, we're just seeing that that's not so much shaping up to be the case.
Mm. Jen Smola, higher ed reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Claire. Take care.
Absolutely. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Claire Roth in for Ann this week. Do you have a kid in college? How is your family preparing for the fall? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
Are Ohio's highways based on American Indian trails?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious CBUS is WOSU's series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at wosu.org/curious.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Claire Roth, sitting in for Ann this week. Ohio State, one of the largest universities in the country, is preparing for a return to the physical campus, with classes starting 3 weeks from today. The school enrolled about 8,400 first-year students, an increase from last year, but some may not be on campus. They may opt to attend remotely. On Friday, the university released a more detailed plan that will require on-campus students to take a pledge, undergo random testing, maintain social distancing, and wear masks. Ohio State fourth-year student Roya Hijazi is president of the undergraduate student body, and she joins us now. Hi, Roya. And Ohio State's Senior Vice President Melissa Shivers oversees student life. She joins us as well. Hello, Melissa.
Hi there.
So tell us a bit about what we learned on Friday. What are OSU's plans for the fall as of now?
Thank you so much, Claire, for your question. As you probably read on Friday, the university has been hard at work over the past few months in preparation for our return to campus this autumn. Our ability and focus on our students and faculty, staff, health and safety has remained at the forefront in all of our planning. And I recognize that as we share with students and parents and families, they're interested in knowing more about what are you going to do to do our best to keep their sons and daughters safe while they're here with us at Ohio State. And we firmly believe it's a partnership. And what you saw on Friday, specifically relative to the pledge, is again, just another demonstration of how we believe that as together as Buckeyes, we can do our best to minimize the risk and the harm from the virus. And so it's really just our opportunity to say, here are the things that we believe are going to be critically important to help maintain the safety of our campus, and that these are all the things that we want to do together in order to be able to have a successful autumn semester.
But the Buckeye Pledge that you're talking about also says a line along the lines of, I acknowledge that even if the university does its best, there is a risk of coming in contact with the coronavirus. And even as the school officials say it's not a legal document, some law professors have argued it amounts to a liability waiver. So what do you say to students or employees who are scared for their health and don't want to sign such a document?
I think that we have an opportunity here at Ohio State to come together, and that the pledge provides us an opportunity as sort of that platform and that agreement to the ways that we will do our best to try to mitigate and minimize the risk of harm. We're going to do everything that we can, and the pledge is just our way of being able to say to our community, let's agree to support one another in our health and safety efforts, in our hope that we can believe that we can remain together as Buckeyes. And quite frankly, I believe a lot in our community, especially in our students, that they will rise to the occasion, because that's just quite frankly what our Buckeyes do.
At the same time, we have a caller, Leah, in Columbus. She's a student, and she says she feels she's being coerced to sign this pledge. If she doesn't sign it, she can't come to campus. Is that the case?
If she does not sign the pledge initially, we will have an opportunity to outreach to Leah to talk a little bit more about the purpose and the intent of the pledge, and that want to learn more about whatever those issues or concerns that she might have that could impact her unwillingness or just not feeling comfortable enough to sign the pledge.
What happens after that stage of outreach if she, for instance, still does not want to sign it?
I think we'll continue to have more conversations with students like Leah about the pledge and the impact and the importance of us coming together as a community.
Another thing that was mentioned in the Friday guidelines that were put out was testing. You're testing 6,500 students on their return to campus, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. How are you deciding which students to test, and what do you hope that testing will accomplish?
So our hope is the random sample of the students that we'll test is that we can at least start to get a better understanding of the prevalence of the virus on our campus. What may be things that we can do to help ensure that we don't create the spread. So learning a little bit more about those students as they're being tested will allow us to provide students with opportunities for quarantine or isolation, and then to be able to engage with contact tracing so that we can again continue to minimize the spread. And so the surveillance testing program is really important for us.
I was going to say, it's going to continue throughout the semester, correct?
Yes. Yes, it will continue throughout the semester.
Can you give us an idea of what percentage of the student population will be tested in any given, you know, week?
I think we're looking at about 300 students a day, and we'll actually have about 100 students that we'll test on a Saturday. So of that 6,500, that percentage, that number is the group that we will be able to look at and to examine every week.
Of course, it's going to be difficult, particularly at the start, because these kids are coming from all over the country. Do you expect there to be additional safety protocols to start, some sort of quarantine period? I mean, how are you going to keep these kids away from each other when they're college students?
That's such a great question, Claire. We are going to ask our students to be able to quarantine when they come to campus. And quite frankly, it would be helpful if students would, prior to their arrival, begin to start to quarantine and put some of those safeguards in place for themselves before they arrive. But we'll certainly ask for those students when they arrive to campus to quarantine for the 10 to 14 days as reasonable before classes start.
I want to bring in Ohio State fourth-year student Roya Hijazi. She's the president of the Undergraduate Student Body. Hi, Roya.
Hello.
So tell me about your thought process as this year began. Of course, plans changed a lot, as was necessary, as coronavirus stats changed. Where was your head at as you started to hear about what your senior year might look like?
Yeah, so for me, it really just felt like a lot of unknowns, where when all of this started, we really had no idea how long it would last, what the circumstances would look like in the fall. And now going into my senior year in about 3 weeks, I've really come to the conclusion that it's going to look way incredibly different from what I ever imagined that I would be. For me personally, all of my classes are online. My student government activities will all be online. So I think the biggest challenge personally for me this year is, how do I remain engaged with my community? How do I engage with students within my capacity as student body president? Because as much as people have learned to adapt to virtual settings, it's also very easy to burn out through virtual settings. So I think a really big piece for me as a student right now is really trying to hold on to that community aspect that a lot of people love about Ohio State, and trying to continue to find ways to engage with people in a safe manner.
Yeah, absolutely. Melissa, how do you expect to tackle that? You're the vice president of student life, and such a big part of college, in the classroom, outside of the classroom, is that interaction with peers. How does Ohio State hope to create that when, you know, everyone has to be at least 6 feet apart?
That's a great question, Claire, and something that we're certainly continuing to think a whole lot about. Students choose a four-year institution like the Ohio State because they want to have the full college experience. And a big part of that is their opportunities to be able to engage with one another and to help build community. So we've spent a lot of time over the summer, and even we actually had a lot of really good practice in the spring when we transitioned to virtual learning to move a lot of our programs and services virtually. What we will know this year is, because we will have students on campus, that being able to still allow for interactions will be incredibly important, while at the same time reminding our students of the health and safety guidelines that are in place, washing their hands, remaining physically distanced, and certainly wearing the mask will allow for us to be able to still have some of those face-to-face interactions that students are looking for, but in a very controlled and thoughtful sort of way. Controlled meaning making sure that they're following the health and safety guidelines.
Well, and let's talk about making sure they follow the health and safety guidelines, because even with testing, social distancing, masking in classrooms, all of these guidelines during school hours, in their off hours, these will be college students. I live next to a house of them. I see them playing beer pong with 15 of their friends every Saturday. So do you think there's going to be more disciplinary action in order to make sure that safety guidelines get followed?
Claire, I do. I think that we are in the middle of a pandemic. And as being a part of a community that's in the middle of a pandemic, we are going to need our community to engage with one another and act as though we're in a pandemic. And so having the large mass social gatherings are not going to be supported. We are going to start to communicate directly with our students about what the expectations are and what could perhaps, as we continue to think about what the ramifications could be for not observing the guidelines, because those guidelines actually apply to whether or not you live on or off campus. And so we are steadily working to this day on what will that look like, and we'll begin to start to share those concerns and our expectations with our students.
Roya, how do you think students are approaching this year? Do you think that they're kind of on alert, or do you think they're seeing it as just a slightly different year, but they're still going to act primarily the same?
Well, I think it's definitely a wide spectrum. I do think that in all cases, there is some level of urgency and alertness, but I still do think that people's understanding and their personal interpretation of how to approach safety guidelines is the issue, because people are approaching things very differently, where some people are still engaging in larger groups because they think that as long as it's my friends, it's okay, and people are just really understanding the risk factors differently. But I do think there's a wide spectrum of students. Just from my work with students, I see that there are students who are prepared to do whatever they can to keep themselves and their roommates safe, and respecting the fact that there are immunocompromised students on our campus. And then otherwise, there are people who just don't feel a certain level of personal responsibility. But I will say that this is not just something that we see within students. This is something that we see across the entire United States right now. And I don't think that this is necessarily something that is coming down to just students and the behavior of students. And I really do hope that this year, that sense of urgency this fall will be very present, so that we can kind of really work towards having having a lot of the opportunities that we used to have back on campus soon.
Yeah. Melissa, Roya just mentioned those immunocompromised students that she's thinking about, that so many on campus are thinking about. What sort of accommodations will be in place for people like them who want to learn, who want to, you know, go to college this year, but might be scared to be anywhere near a classroom?
Absolutely. We have a highly engaged student disability services office that is prepared to and has been working with students all throughout the summer and, quite frankly, even during the spring about accommodation needs. That will be no different. It will actually be heightened this year, so that as students who are immunocompromised, if those students have decided that it would be better for them not to live on campus, we have released them from their housing contracts. If we have students who we know want to live on campus and disclose to us that they are immunocompromised, we are making accommodations for those students to both live in the residence halls as well as be able to engage in our dining facilities and be able to obtain the type of learning and academic experience that they need in order to be successful. So we are asking students, and the same applies to faculty and staff, if there are accommodations that are needed for them to be able to work and engage on the community, as a university, we are providing those support systems as well.
Roya, as president, you've paid a lot of attention to marginalized students who are already facing a lot of challenges. I'm curious if you can help us understand how the pandemic might exacerbate those or just affect them more generally.
Yeah, definitely. So I think two of the biggest ways that come to mind is through academic support and financial support. So reflecting back on our spring semester when students across the country had to leave their campuses so suddenly, that really played a huge role because it exacerbated a lot of issues in housing security and food security. And it showed that a lot of marginalized students are highly dependent on the resources that are provided to them by their college campuses. So there's always this fear that what is this going to look like in this upcoming year? We don't know how much better or worse this virus is going to get, and what position are students going to fall into again. Additionally, with that sudden switch to virtual learning, students really struggled through that adjustment. There was issues with some people live in households that don't have Wi-Fi. Some people do not have access to personal technology. So there's a lot of disparities that really came out that affect students in the classroom and also their ability financially to upkeep with the demands of college. So that's really huge. Luckily at Ohio State, we did have a grant that students could apply to support them during that difficult time. And there were resources that were available. So hopefully that's something that we continue to see more of throughout this year, because just so much has changed for a lot of students experiencing different levels of marginalization in their lives.
On the other side of the equation is faculty who are concerned for their health and, of course, concerned for their classrooms as well. The board of OSU's chapter of the American Association of University Professors said they believe all faculty should be able to choose their mode of teaching without facing penalties or coercions. Melissa, will they be able to do that?
Great question, Claire. From my understanding, and I'm sort of wading now in the waters of my colleague and the provost, the faculty were heavily engaged in the ways that they wanted to deliver their curriculum this semester. So we have had a heavy and a large number of faculty who have shared with us what way that they would like to deliver. And it sounds as though we have obliged and supported those desires in particular.
A lot of schools, even in the last week, we look at CCAD and Miami University, Ohio University, are changing their plans as numbers continue to skyrocket. And we see some moving to remote only. Do you believe OSU will hold firm on its decision to return students to campus at the start of this semester?
You know, we are continuing, Claire every single day to consult with both Ohio State and Ohio public health officials, our colleagues and friends with Wexner. We are looking at the data every day, and we will continue to be nimble. And if there's a need for us to pivot to keep our students' health and safety and our faculty staff health and safety in the forefront, I feel very confident that we will make the right decisions. And we will do that with those particular areas of focus in mind.
Roria, as you look at the upcoming school year in the middle of a pandemic, what do you and other students need from Ohio State in order to have a good school year?
I think for myself and a lot of students, just really looking for leadership and transparency and trust. I think that's really, really crucial during a time like this where a lot of decisions are being made. For some students, there is that understanding of why things are the way that they are now. And for other students, it's really hard to see or understand that. So I think that university leaders being transparent in the decisions and the work that they are doing, whether it has to do with keeping folks on campus and the different measures that are being taken, is incredibly crucial. And I think at the end of the day, that empathy that comes with that is going to be incredibly, incredibly important, because there are challenges that people are facing right now that a lot of folks are just not aware of, with having sick family members and just different issues in people's personal lives with jobs changing and just academic rigor changing. So I think that hopefully there will be a cultural shift in the way that we are not only engaging with students, but just engaging throughout the larger university community this year.
Roria Hijazi, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Roya is the president of the undergraduate student body. And Melissa Shivers, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Melissa is the Ohio State Senior Vice President of Student Life. We are talking about the return to campus on All Sides with Ann Fisher today. I'm Claire Roth in for Ann. Stay with us. We'll have more coming up after the break. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Claire Roth, sitting in for Ann Fisher this week. We're talking about how Ohio colleges and universities plan to begin their fall semesters. We just heard from the state's largest university, Ohio State. For small private schools like Ohio Wesleyan and Ashland University, the pandemic brings many of the same issues and a host of unique challenges to boot. Ohio Wesleyan President Rock Jones oversees a campus in Delaware of 1,500 students. Welcome to the program, Rock.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
And also joining us is Ashland President Dr. Carlos Campo. Ashland has 6,600 students and is located an hour from campus. Excuse me, from Columbus. President Campo, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Great to be with you. Morning, Rock.
So, Carlos. President Campo, classes begin at the end of August. What are some of the immediate changes that students will see on your campus?
Oh, my. Well, they're going to immediately see that their dining hall will be transformed into a place that will hand them a to-go container. They can still choose from different selections, but they'll have staff members filling that container up, and they can walk around with it, walk to a safe place with it, and keep socially distanced. They'll see classroom socially distanced masks worn everywhere. Probably more hand sanitizer than they would like. Those are just some of the changes that come to mind.
A different smell of alcohol wafting through campus than usual.
For sure.
President Jones, what's the plan at Ohio Wesleyan?
Well, it's similar. Our students will arrive, and they will be, as will all of us, wearing facial coverings across the campus. What will they see different? Classrooms will be different with desks socially distanced 6 feet apart from one another. They will see a number of tents on campus where classes can be held outdoors. They'll see 2,200 safety signs spread across the campus. They will see differences in the dining facilities, as Carlos described, from Ashland They'll see differences in the way students interact with one another and in the ways that students interact with faculty as they come back this fall.
You say students interacting with one another. How realistic is it to expect a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds to maintain six-foot distancing, not just in the classroom, but in their dorms and their social time?
Well, I think you ask a good question, and we are appealing to the better angels of our students. Our students will complete a COVID orientation. They will sign a pledge to abide by the standards that we have put in place in order to keep all of us safe. We want to protect our students. We want to protect our faculty and staff. We want to protect the Delaware community, and we are asking our students to be a part of this larger commitment to the safety and health and well-being of the larger community as we go through this time.
I'd love to hear from both of you on how you plan to enforce these policies, how you hope to, you know, ensure that this is actually staying safe.
Well, I'll jump in quickly and say that I think part of it is just setting an expectation really high. So, Claire, one of the things we've done is we've actually created a short film that is kind of a day in the life of a student on campus during COVID. We take this illness very seriously. This virus is dangerous. So we want students to come with a high level of expectation. And in terms of mask wearing, we simply are not going to compromise the seriousness of this. So we are hoping that students will, again, appealing to their better angels. And we want them to know if you're stepping outside without a mask, you need to self-police. But we believe that other students will step in. We've made it clear to faculty members that you absolutely have the right to let a student know that they're not permitted to enter a classroom without a mask on. So while we understand that, you know, this can be a challenge, we believe if we set expectations high that it shouldn't be much of an issue.
What about testing? There's going to be students from all over Ohio, from other parts of the country coming in, you know, creating essentially a new kind of community that hasn't existed in, what, 6 months as far as sharing a biome, let's say. Are you going to do testing to ensure that there's a reasonable level of I guess, a lack of infection to start?
So I can speak for Ohio Wesleyan. We will be testing every student on the return to campus. We'll be using a PCR test. And then we will be testing about 20% of the student body weekly as we go through the course of the semester. We're working with a virologist to determine the process by which we select that 20% to ensure that we're testing from all segments of the campus and can become aware if there becomes a presence of the infection on campus. But we begin with the testing of every student who returns to campus so that we can quickly isolate and quarantine anyone who may arrive with the infection.
To those who arrive and are positive, will you put them in a separate dorm? How will you handle their quarantine?
Yes, we will have a separate setting for them. They will be isolated. They will have no interaction with others on campus. We'll deliver food to that isolated setting for each of their three meals. We will work with the Delaware County Health District on contact tracing to understand whether they have had contact with anyone else who needs to be quarantined either on campus or away from campus, and we'll maintain that protocol as we go through the semester.
President Campo, what about Ashland? How are you handling testing?
You know, our perspective is that we want students to self-monitor. We do not have the wherewithal and capacity to test all students. And frankly, we have seen so many reports on the efficacy of testing and false positives of testing that our perspective is that we're going to do our best to spot test as needed. And I will say, in general, our first mode of response to students who are positive is to have them self-quarantine away from campus. So I think that's different, certainly different from Ohio Northern's response and others. But I think for us, we are hoping that by students quarantining off campus, they'll actually, you know, most of our students come from about an 80-mile radius, easy for them to get back. Those students who can't, we do have a place where they can quarantine on campus, but for the most part, our practice will be students returning home, hopefully getting better quickly and coming back to campus.
Mm-hmm. Prior to the pandemic, Ashland University cut some faculty positions. It started considering cutting some academic programs. There were some financial issues already. I'm wondering how the pandemic is exacerbating those.
Well, interestingly, I think your entire program is showing how the pandemic has accelerated and exacerbated all kinds of situations. So even when I came to Ashland, they had just completed back in 2014 a prioritization process that really was accelerated by the pandemic, so that we did sunset about 20 programs, Claire. Just a week ago, the board approved that action. And while no tenure track faculty have been eliminated, we don't expect that to occur. Many non-tenure track, well, I should say not, perhaps not many, but several were eliminated as part of a cost-cutting measure. We did have to consolidate, and certainly the pandemic accelerated this, but I think part of it too is our ongoing attempt to keep our costs low. We are among the bottom 5% in terms of tuition costs in Ohio. It's been part of our proud tradition at Ashland. And so to do that, we have to be as efficient as possible.
Related to that sunsetting that you just mentioned, the Faculty Senate in May took a no confidence vote related to that and some other issues, but a no confidence vote in your leadership. They cited a lack of collaboration and trust. Do you feel like that relationship between yourself, the school, and the faculty has gotten better in the last 2 to 3 months?
No, that's a great question. I do believe that this is one of those times where shared governance is often stretched, and I think this is one of those perfect examples of that. I do believe in the last month or so, we've had particularly positive conversations. I will not say that the conflict has been resolved, but at the same time, I've seen some very hopeful signs. Ashland's been through a lot in 143-year history, and I am confident that we'll be able to move forward and get through this rough patch as well.
President Jones, how are smaller schools like yours handling this time financially? You're even smaller than Ashland, 1,200 students. How does this affect you?
Well, certainly it's a challenging time for all of American higher education, and the challenges were in place prior to COVID, as the number of students enrolling in college is declining each year because of changing demographics, and in 4 or 5 years will decline even more dramatically. We, like Ashland, are deeply concerned about the cost of higher education, and we have been making reductions in staffing in order to reduce the cost of attendance at Ohio Wesleyan for students in the future. The onset of COVID has accelerated those changes and creates financial challenges for us, particularly with us as we lose room and board revenue when students are choosing to be remote. But we're working through these issues, and we're working collaboratively with the faculty and the staff to ensure that our students are well served, that they continue to have the benefit of an education where in each class in which they're enrolled, they have an individual relationship with their professor who mentors them and not only provides classroom instruction, but mentoring outside of the classroom, so that we can deliver the promise of an Ohio Wesleyan education that prepares students well for life beyond the university.
Will the cost of this pandemic time get passed along to students through tuition, if not this year, in future years?
Well, in our case, when we had planned for a 3% tuition increase this year, and when COVID hit in the spring, we actually rolled back that increase. So for us, the cost of tuition actually this year is less than we had anticipated that it would be. We also increased resources for financial aid for students whose parents were suddenly unemployed, unexpectedly so. And so for us, in fact, for the students, the fees this year are less than would have been expected 6 months ago.
We have just over a minute left, but I'd like to ask President Campo, what are the other considerations that differ for a small private college compared to a really big state university? How do you approach this differently?
Well, I think one of the things is how we must rely on outside expertise. When I think of the large schools and the infrastructure they have in place and the expertise, we simply don't have that kind of capacity. So that's one of the things that comes to mind. We have to rely on outside partners, and they've been terrific in helping Ashland to navigate this difficult time. And that's one that we certainly will continue to rely on in the days ahead.
President Jones, what comes to mind for you in that question?
You know, I think it's a good question. On a small campus, we know one another. Students want to know one another. Faculty members know one another. Staff members know one another. Staff and faculty know one another. And we can work together to find the solutions to these challenges. And I think that it positions us well to work with students, to challenge them to be compliant, to respond to the better angels, and to work with us to ensure that we are safe and healthy while we continue to fulfill the mission. I think as a small campus, we're particularly in a position to do that, as well as to continue to preserve the opportunity for students to study in an atmosphere where they have individual attention from each faculty member in each class in which they are enrolled.
Rock Jones, president of Ohio Wesleyan University, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Claire.
And Carlos Campbell, president of Ashland University, thank you for joining the program.
Thank you. Enjoy the time. Take care.
You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. All Sides is produced by Aaron Esmont and Matthew Rand. The All Sides interns include Tia Torre. If you'd like to hear more All Sides, go to WOSU.org/AllSidesPlus. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. I'm Claire Roth in for Ann Fisher this week. We'll talk again tomorrow.